Welcome to the Fabric Podcast. I'm Melissa Locke. We're revisiting some living room wisdom from March 2019. It was originally shared live over 6 weeks at Field School in Minneapolis. Living room is space to savor life, to grow in wholeness, well-being, and peace. Shalom in Hebrew. Being welcomed and welcoming others into shalom is a basic idea of the Bible. In this episode, Greg Meyer helps us start unpacking this imperative that seems basic and easy to accept in principle, but is so much harder to put into practice, where it really matters. I've listened to this multiple times then and now, and keep hearing new perspectives and discovering better questions than I was asking before. What do I need to give up for others to have more living room? Becomes, what am I missing when I don't? You might notice that much of this message is directed at those of us, or those parts of us, that have readily available space in the societal living room, because of our age or the pigmentation of our skin, the body, abilities, identity, or circumstance we were born with. You might be in that relatively roomy position so much of the time that you can forget you are even in it, like a fish in water. This is a chance to remember and consider the power you have to keep others out or allow them in. Or you might almost never find yourself in space that is truly hospitable or even safe for you to discover and show up as your whole growing self. I hope this can be a clear message that not only do you deserve to have and take up that kind of space, but the world needs you to have it. If that's you, your insight on what would make this a more powerful, holistic, and inclusive conversation would be especially welcomed. Thank you, everyone, for caring, listening, engaging, and for carving out a courageous little slice of living room wherever you are. Welcome. Here's Greg Meyer.
We have been talking about your living room these past weeks. No, it's not that living room, that nice designer, beautiful one, or if you're like a real person, this really kind of messy living room. No, we're talking about the space, the freedom, the room that you need to discover and to be who you truly are. Room for self is such a scarce and precious commodity these days, as we get squeezed from all sides for our time, for our attention, for our income, for our ideas and our privacy. All those things get robbed from us as our ability to be fully human is also taken from us at the same time. And because of that, we have some important things at stake. Taking you through a recap of these last weeks, living room, first of all, living room is necessary for you to be fully human. Yeah, fully human. I mean, that equals being your true self, your inner self being available for other people and for who you can truly be. I mean, I think helping people and giving people the space to be who they need to be so they can be fully human is something we can all be in favor of. And after that, we also looked at the fact that your living room or your lack of it not only impacts you, it impacts others. I mean, think about this. When I don't know my true self, I can't bring it to my relationships, my spouse, my partner, my friends, my kids. They don't get the best of me. And the same thing with my work. If I don't really understand who I am and what I bring to the world and how I interact and am part of the world, there's no way what I do and what I bring to the world is going to be as fully formed and as holistic as it possibly could be. You know, take that a step further. We start realizing that sharing your living room with others isn't just good for them. No, including others in your living room actually expands your own living room. I mean, it's truly a we do this together sort of thing. We add strength, we add depth and capacity to one another when we aren't each in charge of our own little private domains. Now, today I want to take that a step further. And consider the possibility that extending our living room to others isn't just a nice thing to do for others and for us, but it's actually a moral, a God-given mandate. Now, when I say a God-given mandate, I don't mean that this is like some rule, some arbitrary, obligatory sort of thing that we're told we have to do. Now, I'm talking about that this is the way things work, that which has woven this fabric of the universe that we are a part of is telling us that this is how we are woven into the world, right? It's not competing with our needs to be extending our living room to other people. No, it's essential to our own fulfillment. And I believe, and you may be with me on this or not, but I'm inviting you to consider this notion that life in its fullest form is about sharing, not protecting living room. Let me just say it again. Life in its fullest form is about sharing, not protecting living room. Now, ideologically, we may all agree, but in practice, it gets a lot trickier. And it's in practice that this matters, you see? That's where people get hurt, not because we think a certain way, but because we act a certain way. And societally, we are in the game of protecting our living room. I mean, we may not intend any harm to others, but having and keeping our worlds the way we want them keeps others out, with little left over to live on oftentimes. So what happens? What happens when the world doesn't allot living room equitably to all people? Well, some people don't get permission to be who they truly are. They have to conform to someone else's standards or expectations. We say, no, people aren't like that. Think about the LGBTQ community and how they are told that the way you see yourself doesn't fit in the way that we define the world. And so I'm sorry, you can be here, but you can't be like that. Now, other people are systematically disadvantaged or even persecuted because of some single characteristic. We see this in race, right, folks? I mean, if you're black, if you're Hispanic, if you're Asian, we say we can see that about you, and that is going to put you into a category where you are disadvantaged and maybe where we cut off opportunities to you. Same around gender. The characteristic is that they're female, not male, or it can be around income. Oftentimes, poor people not only have the disadvantage of not having all the resources they need to meet their needs, but simply because they are poor, they are categorized and put into a group where they are not given access to all the same opportunities and the possibilities that the rest of the population, the dominant population, might happen to have. Other people are just simply kept at bay because they came to the party too late. You aren't part of us who are already here, so we're sorry. You may not have safety, you may not have employment or freedom where you are, but that's not our problem. You've got to solve that yourself. And we apply this to immigrants, to asylum seekers that come to our country, and for other people. I mean, the list is a lot longer than those, but those are some of the really big ones that are among us today. And they reflect the fact that we aren't letting people into our living room. Now, if we believe that everyone requires living room to be fully human, then we need to not be keeping them from having it. I mean, wouldn't you agree with that? Let me speak then to, there's a background issue around this that often gets mixed up here, and I think we need to clarify it a little bit. So let me speak to the spiritual versus the physical dimensions of this. We get it mixed up all too often. Basically, it's this, that living room is an inner spiritual issue, and it's a physical circumstance one as well. I mean, the spiritual interpersonal side of living room is fundamental. That's why we've been talking about it for several weeks. And I do believe it is the first step for everyone, no matter what. I mean, ultimately, our living room is going to be something that is found within us, not from outside of us. I mean, think of the examples of that. I mean, you have Elie Wiesel and Nelson Mandela. Two people who discovered who they were and what their calling in the world was when they were either in a concentration camp or in prison. Or we think about in the Bible, I mean, often the Bible is using this experience of being out in the wilderness, of being in a situation of deprivation, not of being surrounded with wealth and luxury, in order to find out who you are and to discover your place and to discover your work. I mean, Jesus was that way. Abraham was that way. Moses was that way. Israel was that way. Paul was that way. And then you have the Native Americans or the Australian Aboriginals who have their vision quest or their walkabout, discovering themselves in these times of deprivation in the wilderness. Okay, so, there's this spiritual side to it, but it doesn't stop there because we are not only spiritual beings, we are flesh and blood beings too. And that part of us is not less important, all right? Neither is it a separate part of who you are. The spiritual and the physical are part of one another. They're integrated. They're connected. Jesus knew this. Jesus was giving both messages and helping us to see both sides of this all the time, right? Jesus, on his own wilderness journey where he was discovering himself, was tempted to choose the path of using his power to simply feed people. I mean, they'd certainly follow me then, right? To which he responded, people don't live by bread alone. And filling people's physical needs isn't everything. But then Jesus also told us that when we feed, when we clothe, when we care for, when we visit those people who some might consider to be the least of all people, we're not just doing it for them, we're doing it for God. I mean, what Jesus is saying is that our physical cells aren't just shells for our spirit. They are also who we are. That's important. It's part of the whole. So if our whole self is a product of our physical as well as our inner self, then when someone doesn't have economic or educational opportunity, which are just circumstances, right, not the inner self, they are nonetheless disadvantaged in finding the living room they need to be whole. When someone is denied justice or is under attack, carries a burden that isn't theirs, is taught to believe that there is something wrong with themselves, when they live with shame or abuse, they too, they don't have the living room that they need to be whole. Now for me, when I reflect on this tough message, which is really calls me to a bigger place in my life, this is something I realize. And it's that what I do with my space, with my influence, my power, we'll call it what it is, my privilege, for those whom I see to not have the life circumstances that they need to be whole, what I do with that is an expression of who I am. Now, I want you to listen to that carefully, because this is an important concept, and it's at the heart of what it means for us to be people who claim that this three-stranded cord of self and others of God is meant to be woven. What I do with my privilege for those whom I see not to have all those life circumstances that they need to be whole, that is an expression of who I am and of how I see myself in the world. My action, my inaction for those without living room is an expression of my self-understanding. If I deny that person, if I turn my back, if I don't go the extra mile, I don't give my second coat, basically if I don't share what has been entrusted to me, it not only means I don't know, really know who I am, it also undermines my ability to have living room for myself and for my children and for my community. So now as we do this, you know, we're getting into all the messy stuff about sacrifice and how much and the competing demands of my life versus everyone else's, or of caring for my family versus helping someone else, of who knows, maybe paying more taxes so that others who maybe haven't worked as hard as I have for what I have so that they can have an opportunity, or pouring what makes a difference in my life into that bottomless pit of need in the world. And it all gets really, really hard. And sometimes I just want to give up. So, you know, what I decided to do is that we would just watch some cute videos of animals getting along. Yeah, podcasts, you can go to YouTube and you can look up cats with lizards or just cute animals getting along, right? And after about 10 or 20 minutes of watching those, I'll just say, why can't we all get along with that? And we'll all just go home, right? Yeah, you know, I wish it was that easy. I wish it could be like that. This is hard stuff, but that isn't how it is, right? This is something we actually have to dig into and to wrestle with. And here's the fact that we cannot escape. See the picture? The picture of Earth from the outer space? That's it, folks. We have to share this planet. We now have the ability to destroy this planet that we live on, or we have the ability to make it flourish. Destroying it fast as possible, destroying it slowly by not dealing with anything is more likely. Making the world we share flourish, however, okay, that's going to be hard. But that's what we're going to do. That is exactly what we're going to do. And I believe that's why you are here. You're willing to do the hard work. You are here to be in community and have the support and to have the vision to be able to wrap your life around seeing it and being that kind of change every day. Okay, with me at that? Okay, now, here's another picture of the world. This is the political picture. You can see all the countries with their borders, even got their names written across them. Each country's in a different color. I mean, we think about the world like this, but this is a human construct. It may be how we think, but has little bearing with how the world actually works. Culturally, the world is way more mixed. Our languages, our customs, our ideas, our practices, they spill beyond any border. Artistically, Earth is this enormous hodgepodge. I mean, there are concentrations of these kinds of artistic tendencies and practices, but there are also enormous areas of overlap and influence. No clear boundaries. Economically, these barriers mean almost nothing. It was back in 1974. Guy wrote a book called Global Reach, kind of upset a lot of things at that time. It documented the reality that the economics of multinational corporations were supplanting the role of governments. That was 55 years ago, before the invention of the internet even, right? But this is what we've got. The Earth out there, not nearly as big as we might imagine it, it's the one Earth that we have to share. Ecologically, this is the truth. The wind, the atmosphere doesn't care about our borders. Neither do the waters. Minerals and soil, well, they may be geographically fixed, but there is only so much of them. And they must do for everyone, no matter which side of a line or what color of a spot we happen to be on. So, you know, I'm not a no borders, no nations, just so live as one people, kumbaya kind of person. No, you know, there are all kinds of practical, functional reasons why we have nations and local identities. You know, that can all be good too. But it doesn't change the fact that we are all part of one humanity on one planet. A person in Mozambique, in North Korea, or here in the U.S. is still a human being on this one planet. No more valuable or worthy of love and respect as anyone else. The Bible, without the ability to step back and look at the planet this way, always understood it. I mean, it is always focused on the needs of those that do not have a place. These are some early words given to Israel during an era of prosperity, which the wealthy were enjoying, but not everyone else was. They're written by a guy named Amos, a prophet, the kind of guy you probably never wanted to invite to your party because he'd be bringing everybody down because he was always telling the truth. So he's on a tirade here against the people who are protecting their living room at the expense of others. He writes this: "Hear this, you that trample on the needy and bring to ruin the poor of the land." I don't think I need to do much translating there. That's pretty clear. "Saying, when will the new moon be over so that we may sell grain, and the Sabbath so that we may offer wheat for sale?" Okay, that needs a little translation. So the Jewish people this time had two pauses. One was a weekly pause, a Sabbath. And business transactions, everything we were doing individually, our own little hectic races to get to the top would stop once a week for us to celebrate Sabbath together. And the new moon is the same thing. So there was a day a week and there was a day every month that was focused on what we do together, who we are as a people and as a community before we go back to our helter-skelter, do things for ourselves. And what Amos is saying here is that so many people are like, yeah, get the new moon over with because I'm just tolerating this, what we have to do together. What's important to me is what I can do individually. I want to get myself ahead. I want to look after my living room. And the same with the Sabbath. You know, Sabbath is great. I know the stuff I got to do, but I wish it would be over so I can get back to business. Yeah, sacrificing who we are together in order to be about what I am individually. He goes on and says, "We will make the ephah small and the shekel great." You all know what that means, right? Well, anyway, the ephah is a unit of measure, right? That's the amount of something you're selling. And the shekel is currency, right? That's the price. We're going to make that big. So basically saying we're going to sell smaller and smaller amounts for more and more money. And we're going to practice deceit with false balances, he goes on. And then this is the clincher line: bind the poor for silver and the needy for a pair of sandals. I mean, he's not just like taking advantage of people. He's turning them into commodities. He doesn't care what happens to them, all right? Buying the poor and the needy, actually buying them. Amos is telling us here what justice looks like. More precisely, he's telling us what injustice looks like. A couple of weeks ago, we were talking about how Jesus was giving us a similar picture with some different language. We were talking about how Jesus continually uses his descriptions of the kingdom of heaven over and over. The kingdom of heaven is like. The kingdom of heaven is like. Now, the kingdom of heaven isn't maybe what pops into your head when you hear the word heaven, like you die and then you go to heaven. I mean, he wasn't talking about that. Jesus was frankly never talking about that. He was talking about God's world when it's being realized right here among us, right? That's the kingdom of heaven breaking in. It is our lives being fully woven into the fabric of existence that God provides us. That's the place where justice happens. That is the just place. The word justice doesn't come from this idea of having laws or rules that you're supposed to follow and you're not allowed to break them. No, the word justice actually derives from the idea of alignment, aligning what is right with what happens, right? Justice is being in right relationship with self and others and God. And when we're talking about living room, that's a relationship where everyone has room to live, I with others, with the insight, the big picture vision of our world that God would give us. And here's a little bit what that looks like. First of all, it means that there is a safe space for everyone, a place where everyone is secure in terms of food and shelter and safety. You know, that bottom layer of Maslow's hierarchy of needs. Unfortunately, there are hundreds of millions of people on our planet who don't have this. And the truth is that everyone having space to be safe should be a given. We have the ability and the resources in our world today for that to be universal. Sure, there's always going to be people who don't have it at times, things are going to happen, but then we should assume that everyone can, and when they don't, we should be seeking to remedy it as fast as we can. That's a given. But just safe space hardly seems like enough. I mean, living room means more than not being in danger. It means being in a situation in which you aren't focused on survival, but you have the space for dreams and the ability to work towards them. I'd call that space to thrive. So not only should everyone have space to be safe, and that should be a given, but everyone having space to thrive should be what we seek. That should be our vision. That should be our aspiration. But to get back to that idea of living room, to make sure that others have room in which to be safe or thrive, we are going to have to approach it with one of two ways of looking. For others to have this space, we either have to give up some of ours and see that it happens that way, or we're going to have to share some of ours. And those are really different from each other. If sharing space with other people was as easy as it is right, it would already be happening. And we wouldn't be talking about that right now. But in truth, it does happen. I mean, it happens all the time. It happens when a person marries another person, right? I mean, you decide to put one house and to share one room, to share one life together. You aren't each declaring your own territory and protecting it. No, you are sharing that territory. You are not giving up some space. You are welcoming someone else into yours. You are sharing your space with someone else. It happens when we have kids. I mean, kids are the most enormous invasion of our lives. Yet somehow, it doesn't feel that way. I mean, we don't give up. We become something new. We welcome them into our lives. We share that, and our lives and our world get bigger and greater all the time. It happens with our friends. It happens with my neighbors. I mean, yeah, I've got a fence on both sides of my house between my neighbors and myself. I mean, I know where my boundaries are. I know what is mine, but I love my neighbors. I love the fact that they're next door. And we cross over into each other's living rooms all the time. We share this larger space that all of us bring together by welcoming each other into it and not defining it as our own and not theirs. But while we do this with people we are intimately connected with, we're pretty poor at doing it with others, people that we're not connected with. And maybe that's why the Bible talks about strangers so often. You know, strangers, that person you don't know the name or history of, that person that you may not know the customs and language of, and you may not share their religion even. And the Bible makes no distinction. The Bible over and over again says, welcome the stranger. Make them family. And maybe that's why Jesus constantly ticked off the religious leaders of his time, because he was always hanging out and paying attention and valuing people that they saw as outsiders, people that weren't good enough, that didn't fit the mold, that weren't the kind of society that they wanted to have. And they used that word. Think about that word, outsiders. If you were thinking about living room and either keeping people out or sharing your living room, and some people have the label outsider, wow, we're really saying something there, aren't we? I mean, we're called to not have outsiders. We're called to make strangers family. So as we look at what creating living room, a kind of living room that's going to allow people to thrive, this is what we're going to see. And it's also maybe why it's so difficult. So I want to take a couple minutes here as we close up to look at what sharing our living room means, all right? The first thing is that it means we don't allow and tolerate others, but we welcome and appreciate them. That's a world of difference, right? And this isn't easy. I mean, our instinct is to protect, not to share. Are those other people, are they invaders of our living room, like Chris talked about in his message last week? Or are they welcome guests? Do they take away from what we have? Or do they embellish it? Do they add variety and richness and skills? And do they bring insights to the game for us? Opening new possibilities, expanding our living room, not shrinking it. Again, as Chris said last week, is there a scarcity mentality at work here? Or is it an abundance mentality? Okay, you know, we don't allow and tolerate others, but we welcome and appreciate them. Another thing that we discover as we try to share our living room with others is that inaction and silence on behalf of the oppressed are consent and complicity to their oppression. Ouch. Yeah, that's true. I think Martin Luther King Jr. said it best when he said, "In the end, we will remember not the words of our enemies, but the silence of our friends." The call to love our neighbors as ourselves doesn't just mean we can't chase people away from the space they need to thrive. It means we can't leave the door closed either. We need to use our voices. We need to use our actions to welcome them, to embrace them. But, you know, what do we hear our inner selves, our mistaken selves saying? We say, well, the problem is when they come, they mess everything up. I mean, they don't do things the way we do. They have huge needs and no easy solution to the problems. Things just aren't the same anymore. You know, it's just not practical. Yeah, that's true. And so we want to control their presence in our living room, and that kind of lets us see what the third thing about sharing our living room with others means, and that is this. Being the welcomer doesn't make you the terms setter, right? Just because you're the one at the door inviting people in doesn't mean you get to decide what it's going to look like once they come inside. And that's right, I get it. It may not seem fair. After all, it is your space, and you were there first. Shouldn't you be the one to set the rules? Yeah, well, let's remember, first of all, we're talking about living room, right? We aren't talking about your home, your clothes, your cupboard. I mean, these certainly have a time and a place when they are to be shared as well because of who you understand yourself to be and you understand your role in the world and with your neighbors to be. But that's not it, all right? I mean, that's the giving up, not sharing, right? Sharing your living room is about what that other person needs in order to be fully human. The opportunities, the access, the support, the voice, the freedom that those who are already here enjoy and assume, but maybe aren't available to some other people. All right? The U.S. freed black slaves a mere 150 years ago, and when it happened, the terms were set for them. You can be free, but here's the deal. You go to that school, not this one. You aren't able to use a library. You can't eat at that restaurant. There's your water fountain in your bathroom. And did I mention that the interest rates on your loans will be higher if you can move into this neighborhood, which you can't? There's a neighborhood for you over there, and on and on and on. Women were welcomed into the workplace years ago, too, but the terms were that it still works according to rules that tend to correlate with being male. Maternity leave doesn't fit in. Men never needed that. Assertiveness is required, but not really allowed. I mean, it doesn't look good on women. And you can work in the department, but you can't lead it. And did I mention that the pay for you will be lower for the same sort of work? Because you're not a breadwinner. That's a man's position in the family. Okay, I mean, you get it. These are historical terms setting that happened a long time ago and have hurt people and kept them from the living room that they need to thrive. And most of these terms, I'm afraid, haven't been renegotiated yet today. Yeah, we still labor underneath them. So, space to thrive. I mean, that's what we're looking for. Space to flourish. That's what Jesus came for. Remember, he said, "I have come that you may have life and you may have it abundantly." Yeah, living room isn't a luxury. It belongs to all people. And living room isn't found in luxury. It isn't a big house. It isn't a nice car. It's not a great job. And those things can be a trap for you as well as they can free you. No, living room is something inside you. It's something that's inside everyone. And finding it there allows you to take it to the rest of your life and to share it with others so that they can have the quiet, the peace, the safety, the security, and the hope to find it within themselves, and then they can join you in it. No matter how much or little you feel you have, start welcoming others into it. You'll be joining them in theirs too. You've got people that you can welcome into your living room right now. You've got children, you've got partners, you have friends and coworkers, you've got neighbors and relatives that don't have enough left. Share the generous spirit of yourself with them. Be brave. Be bold. Say what hardly anyone ever says, but everyone wants to hear, that there is more to life, especially when we do it together. Reach for it. We will be stronger together.
Thanks for listening. Maybe sharing this podcast will help you start an important conversation with someone in your life. You can find discussion resources and ways to connect on our website at fabricmpls.com. Creating living room is something we need to do together. And that movement toward wholeness and interconnection of self, other people, this world, and the divine, that which always remembers, knows, and draws you toward who you are, that's how we talk about life woven deeply.